cause they live in the bricks. Jumped on the George Wash to the natural turnpike. Head feeling right from a long night. Whoa, I see Jake, so I let off the gas. So I was doing 55 when I passed.
KBLA Talk 1580. I'm Dominique DePrima. Time for our daily deep dive, and I'm so excited to welcome in to the space the KBLA delegation this morning. A senator from the state of California. He's got a lifetime of experience, 2 decades of public service, first as a Gardena City Councilman, then as a state assemblyman, and now as a state senator. He is a citizen activist and a public servant. Senator Steve Bradford, good morning.
Good morning, Dominique. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great to have you on. You've been a busy, busy man, and that's to the benefit of not just California, but actually our nation.
I try to be. That's what you sent me there to do. Do some work.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I know that for some of the projects that you've been working on, especially around when you talk about public safety, reimagining public safety, and making real lasting changes, it can be slow going. I mean, I feel like in the summer of 2020, when we saw all those protests, you brought legislation forward, and it got shot down, and it makes it seem like, oh, we'll never get anywhere. But clearly, you persevered.
Without a doubt, yeah. Last year, during the whole George Floyd COVID unrest, I introduced SB 731, which was the police decertification bill. And I wouldn't necessarily say it got shot down, but we had political maneuvers that found a way to hold the bill. And even some of our allies who quickly got on board this year was finding reasons not to support the bill last year. And so we were able to regroup and come back even stronger and named it after Kenneth Ross Jr., a young African-American who was shot by Gardena police officer in 2018. And was able to build a strong coalition and get it to the finish line and get it to the governor's desk. And the governor came to Gardena at Raleigh Park, where Kenneth Ross Jr. lost his life, and signed the measure.
Yeah, I know that was an amazing moment for you and also for the family.
Yes, and I think it showed the importance of this measure, but also recognizing the senseless way of Mr. Ross lost his life unnecessarily. He was unarmed. He was running from, not toward the police, running from the police. So we really appreciate the governor showing the respect to the family, as you stated, and to the community as well, coming down and signing this measure.
Yeah, I think it's important. I've interviewed so many families whose loved ones were killed by police. And one of the things that I most commonly hear, Senator, is they don't hear from the police departments. They don't hear from lawmakers. They don't hear from anybody except possibly, you know, Black Lives Matter. And they feel like that is disrespect on top of tragedy.
Without a doubt. Kenneth Ross Jr.'s mother, Miss Amaru, she was very appreciative of the governor. I mean, but at the beginning, as you stated, she was skeptical of not only me, but of the process of what we were trying to do. And she had heard promises before over the, you know, 3 years that Kenneth had lost his life. And I made a commitment to her a little over a year ago that, hey, just stick with us and we're going to get this thing done. And we were able to do that. So she was very appreciative, again, of the governor coming out and meeting with her and her Kenneth's siblings and signing the measure.
Let's talk about what SB 731, the Kenneth Ross Police Decertification Bill, what it really actually does.
Well, it's now SB 2. It's a police decertification. It allows post police officer standard and training now to revoke the licenses, or the certification, I should say, of police officers who commit misconducts, serious crimes, the taking of a life, regardless of a conviction. California is able to, as you know, revoke the license of doctors, lawyers, teachers, nurses, even remove bad politicians from office and cosmetologists and barbers, but you cannot, up until now, take the license or certification away from a police officer. We now join 46 other states that have such a process, but I think ours is the most robust, I should say, in the nation. That's going to be fair and transparent. It's going to be fair to law enforcement, but it's also going to restore, I should say, the confidence and trust in the community to know that these bad officers can be removed from the department and taken off the street.
That's the thing that surprises me all the time. I mean, you talk about how this one is more robust, but the thing about it is, how are we, like 46 other states already have this, and California is that late to this kind of very simple tool to keep officers, which we've seen a lot, from getting fired in one department and then popping up in some other tiny department and continuing, violent, illegal behavior?
As I call it, the Ross, Rinse, and Repeat Act. And the officer who shot Kenneth Ross was an example of that. He had been involved in three questionable shootings in Orange County, only to leave Orange County before the investigations were completed and join Gardena Police Department. And as soon as I heard about Mr. Ross' killing, I asked who the officer was. And I didn't know the officer's name. As you know, I've grown up in Gardena my entire life, and I've been on first-name basis with the last four police chiefs and pretty much the entire department. And when I heard this officer's name, I didn't know who he was, only to find out he had transferred from another department. So this will prevent that type of, just shuffling around, because as I've grown up to know, a leopard doesn't change his stripes simply because, or spots, I should say, just because you left a department, one department, doesn't mean you're going to change your behavior. So this at least puts some confidence. And yes, you're right, California, how are we to be so progressive? We're now the 47th state to have a decertification process. So we were late to the table.
Talking with Senator Steve Bradford, when we continue the conversation, I want to really delve into why. Clearly not you, Senator Bradford, but why so many lawmakers seem to be reluctant to make even the most minor changes to how we deal with law enforcement. And how can we change that? It's KBLA Talk 1580.
This holiday season, we get to wish you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, and Happy Hanukkah. Thank you for supporting us in our first year on the air. KBLA Talk 1580. Thanks for waking up with Dominique DePrima on KBLA Talk 1580.
Yes, indeed. We are talking with Gardena's own Senator Steve Bradford. And before we continue this conversation, I do want to thank you and commend you just for your tenacity in really, not giving up on these projects, even while I think you've been able to strike a balance. It's not easy, the balance of being accountable and trying to change the relationship and the policies of policing law enforcement towards our community. At the same time, you've been able to remain supportive of law enforcement, and certainly given the moment we're in with violence and crime, that also has to be part of your portfolio as a lawmaker, right?
Without a doubt. I tell folks all the time, I have family and friends who are in law enforcement, so this is by no stretch of the imagination an anti-police measure. It was a safe community, a safe police measure, and being able to bring everybody to the table. And law enforcement wasn't quick to come to the table, I must admit to that. But I was able to reach out to, again, those folks who trusted me and that I trusted in law enforcement. I just got back from Atlanta for the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. And law enforcement folks from all across the country, we're talking about SB2, and these were African American officers from New York, Georgia, South Carolina, who were like, "Hey, we needed this, and it makes our job easier." So it was an effort that brought everybody together.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, and I think being from the community probably makes a really big difference in that quest, I would imagine.
It helps. I mean, knowing the community, knowing what some of the concerns were, but at the same time, having a good relationship with the officers here in Gardena. I mean, it's a balancing act nonetheless, and not everybody was supportive. I mean, I still get some funny looks from law enforcement now when I'm at an event and they're in the room and they look at me funny, and but it's all good.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all good for you. I feel like a lot of lawmakers are reluctant to dip their toes here. And I know, these are the views and opinions of Dominique, not Senator Bradford. But I feel like police unions are one type of union that shouldn't be endorsing candidates or even donating to political campaigns, because they have to keep all of us safe. Republicans and Democrats, that's supposed to be the portfolio. So that said, you know, I feel like a lot of lawmakers don't want to deal with these kinds of issues. We weren't able to get it done on the federal level in Congress, despite the best efforts of Congresswoman Karen Bass and Senator Cory Booker. And yet, you know, you have found a way to get it done. How do you think what is the formula for getting more of our lawmakers to be willing and able to step up and champion these kinds of measures?
Being willing to speak truth to power and just not backing down. Yes, the police union is probably one of the most powerful political forces outside of teachers all across this country. And many legislators, no matter what they say, cower many times when they come up against a entity that can put up hundreds of thousands of dollars and even millions of dollars if they're so motivated for or against a candidate. But I'm of firm belief it shouldn't be about, you know, yes, you need to be elected in order to do the work. But so I know where the caution and concern is. But sometimes you got to put aside your own political interests and political life to do the right thing. I was taught in this business early on before I was ever elected to run for office for one or two reasons: to be something or to do something. I've always wanted to do something, and far too many of our elected officials want to be something.
Interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. I think that I want to just go over, we talked about what the police decertification bill did, but there were a couple other things that passed in the state of California as far as law enforcement reimagining or reform. In that same batch of bills, including raising the minimum age for police officers, I think, and some other tweaks.
Yeah, that bill was Reggie Jones Sawyer, Assemblyman Reggie Jones Sawyer's legislation. And as I stated, we just got back along with Supervisor Holly Mitchell from Atlanta for the NBCSL. And Reggie's bill, as well as two of my bills, were held up as model legislation. So, yes. Raising the age for joining police departments. We all know, as he stated, the maturity level isn't there just simply because you're 21. And as we all know, we've all made mistakes and done things at 21 that we wouldn't do at 25, let alone at 30. So that's a good measure. You also had Senator Comlager's The Crisis Act that, you know, is what a lot of folks are trying to do across this country and even on the national level of seeing, instead of responding to someone who's having a mental challenge or a drug issue with someone with a gun and heavily armed, send out a drug counselor, a crisis counselor, a psychiatrist. So that was another piece of legislation. And Chris Holden, Assemblyman Chris Holden from the Pasadena area, he had the bill, duty to intervene, as we saw in Minneapolis. You saw those other three officers just stand there as Mr. Floyd lost his life and did absolutely nothing to prevent this officer from removing his knee from his neck. And so Mr. Holden has duty to intervene. That the governor also signed those three other measures at Raleigh Park with us.
Yeah, I love that these are coming from African-American lawmakers, I have to say. Let's talk about Bruce's Beach. This is a spot of really great news that people are excited about. And talk about your role in helping to bring to fruition this long-term plan of Bruce's Beach being returned to the family who it was taken from.
Well, SB 796, the Bruce Beach measure, was something, too, that I was honored to author and get the governor to sign. It tries to write a horrible past in our history. As you stated, Charles and Willard Bruce was an African-American couple who bought a plot of land in 1912 in Manhattan Beach and opened up a bathhouse, a dance hall, and a cafe. And it was, from almost the day it opened, was tremendously successful. And it catered to African-Americans, adhering to the laws of the land, the Jim Crow laws of the land, then separate but equal. And it catered to African-Americans throughout Southern California, throughout the state, and across the nation. They came there to recreate at the beach, as all of us would want to do and like to do. And up until then, there was probably only one other place for African Americans to recreate, and that was the Equal in Santa Monica. And the city of Manhattan Beach was furious at the fact that this place was successful. And it was so successful that six other families bought properties around that area. And they started harassing the family, setting fire to the lodge, vandalizing the cars of all the patrons that came. And despite all of that, the Bruces thrived and survived for 12 years. And once they realized the KKK and all that, KKK and all the harassment couldn't run them out, the city took it upon themselves to use the law to commit a crime. They took the property via eminent domain under the guise of building a park, only to hold the property for over 20 years and never build a park. So what my legislation did and does is allow, let me give you back a little sequence. The city took it in 1928. They held it till 1948. Then they deeded it to the state of California. The state of California held on to it to 1995. Then we deeded it to the county of Los Angeles. What my bill does now is remove those restrictions on the land to allow the county now, who's in possession of the land, to transfer it back to the Bruce family. And that's what SB 796 does. So.
Congratulations. I mean, it's a really big deal. And these are the kinds of things we hear about that you think are going to take generations, and it feels like it's moving fairly swiftly.
Well, it did take generations.
Yeah, I mean, that's
years,
true.
But yes, we were able to do it because of the tremendous work of the county. If the county wasn't on board, and I have to commend Supervisor Janice Hahn, whose district it is, but more importantly, Holly Mitchell as well, who stood steadfast. And as I said, the five bad women on L.A. County who take the courageous vote to say, hey, we're going to return this property to this family. So they say, yes, the wheels of justice sometimes turn slow, but once you get them moving, you know, you can get a lot of stuff done. So Bruce Beach is a fine example, and people want to call it reparations. I wouldn't quite call it reparations because this property was stolen from this family. This was returning what was theirs. And sadly, there is now a individual in Palos Verdes who's lodged a lawsuit trying to prevent and delay the transfer of the property, stating that it's a gift of public funds or public property. Let me be clear. If your car is stolen, if your wallet is stolen, any of your property is stolen and it's returned to you, it is not a gift. And this is what happened to the Bruce family. Their property was stolen from them. So we're returning that which was rightfully theirs.
That's a great point. That's amazing that someone would try to stand in the way of that, but not surprising, just amazing. And I hope they don't succeed.
We hope that we don't believe they will. It's just more of a delays that we've experienced. I mean, look, the city of Manhattan Beach, for the most part, hasn't even apologized to the Bruce family or to the community as a whole. Yes, we have the mayor now who has, but the previous mayor said absolutely nothing, and two other members of the council said absolutely nothing as it relates to apology. The governor, again, not only came on site and signed the measure, but he too apologized to the Bruce family. Anthony Bruce, who's the great-great-grandson, was there when we signed the measure, and apologized directly to him, and Chief Shepherd, who was there as well, who's a descendant of the Bruce family.
That's amazing. Yeah, I just think it's, when I say it takes a long time sometimes, it's because, you know, the wheels of justice may turn slow. And we know it took generations, but once it comes into the public eye and we say, okay, well, legislators are thinking about it, you think, oh, it should be another 5 to 20 years. It seems like it's been about a year that it's really been in the public space as far as legislators dealing with it.
Oh, without a doubt. We dealt with this within the year. You're right about that. But I have to recognize also Mitch Ward, who's the former city councilman, the only African-American ever elected, the former mayor, who really brought this to the forefront in 2006 when he advocated and got the votes to change the name of the park and name it Bruce Beach and put a monument sign there. And Kavon Ward, an amazing young lady who lives in Manhattan Beach, who heard about this and really started beating the drum about 2 years ago to bring this to attention, because as Supervisor Hahn stated, she grew up in L.A. her entire life, and up until last year had never heard about this situation. So it's a way of how we continue to deny the truth and whitewash and bury what's happened right here in L.A. County. So we have to recognize that what Mitch Ward did and Kevon Ward did in bringing attention to this issue.
Senator Bradford, you know, you pushed through this decertification bill, and you've been an advocate for reimagining public safety. So it makes it seem even more unusual that you are the chair of the California State Public Safety Committee. Talk about that role a little bit.
Well, I owe that to the president pro tem, Toni Atkins. She asked me around this time last year what I take on this role in light of all the challenges that we saw, not only in California, but across the country. And even though we had a stalwart in Nancy Skinner, my predecessor in public safety, she just felt the dynamics were at a point where I think having a person of color there and being heading up that committee would add a little more attention to some of these issues and make it a little, you know, give us a little bit more up and fight. So I was honored when she asked me to do that. So yes, I'm humbled by it. And Reggie Jones Sawyer is the chair on the assembly side, and this is the first in California's history that you've had two African Americans chair of public safety in the California legislature, and probably only two African Americans in any other state that are chairing public safety.
So you also spent time in the assembly where you had 43 different bills signed into law. We've got about a minute and a half before news and traffic. Would you like to highlight one of those?
In the assembly, golly.
throwback Monday, or even the seven that you have authored this year.
Well, I will speak to the one in 2019, because a lot of folks kind of missed that. And that's SB 206, the Fair Pay to Play Act, which allows college athletes now to monetize their name, image, and likeness. I think that's critically important, especially in light of what we see in sports all across this nation. But many times they think about only the male athlete, but who's benefiting the most in the time that this legislation has come to fruition are female athletes, because as we all know, it's very little professional opportunities for female athletes. So that's one I'm very much proud of. Gun enhancements, I passed that SB 206, which now allows judges not to automatically sentence individuals simply because you were in the possession. He had possessed a gun but didn't fire it. Up until then, it was automatic enhancements put on your sentencing. Now we've been able to give judges discretion on gun enhancements as well. So
yeah, those are two really big ones. In fact, I want to touch, when we continue the conversation after news and traffic, a little bit more on the impacts of that SB 206, because I think that is huge, and I loved that piece of legislation. It's KBLA Talk 1580.
She's reclaiming her time on KBLA Talk 1580. More First Things First with Dominic DePrima when we come forward. History is now, and you are part of it. Thank you for spending your days with KBLA Talk 1580. Let's jump back into the conversation. We've got a lot to talk about.
We're talking about it with 35th District Senator Steve Bradford. He may be your senator. He probably is. And we do have a lot to talk about, much to talk about. You were able to secure some pretty significant investments in the district, which really isn't, there are investments in Black Los Angeles and Brown Los Angeles and Black California. I think the money for the $50 million for Charles Drew University to have a medicine and science building, which will hopefully lead to their medical school, is a huge deal.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's something very important. A lot of folks are unaware that Charles Drew University School of Medicine and Science graduates the most people of color, doctors, African-Americans, other than HBCU. And so I think it's important that it's right in the heart of our community, and that we not only support this fine university, but make sure that it survives and thrives. So I was excited about being able to secure those funds, as well as $60 million for Cal State University of Dominguez Hills.
Your alma mater, yes. That's what you call bringing home the bacon.
Bringing it home, and also right across the street from Charles Street University, another $10 million for Martin Luther King Hospital, which is a critical facility that supports not only the community of Watts, but a 10-mile radius. I mean, it's very few hospitals in that area now with the downsizing of St. Francis and all the other closures of hospitals, so it's important as well.
So what will that $60 million for Cal State Dominguez Hills, what will it be used for?
Infrastructure. Even though the campus is one of the newest, you know, was established in the early 60s, it has been ignored. It needs tremendous improvement and maintenance, so it's going to improve walkways. It's going to help also build some additional buildings there. They just did a dedication for a new housing unit of over 400 beds there, so we're excited about that, and a new tech and business center. But yes, it's going to help with some of the infrastructure. The gymnasium is in and locker room is in poor need of repair, so it's going to be critically important for the campus and helping with some of the infrastructure improvements that need it there.
Yeah, it's a great point about the housing. I mean, we saw what happened with Howard University and the strike there. And LA Times had a great article about how so many students now are living in their cars and simply cannot afford housing. I would think that building affordable dorms or affordable housing units for college students throughout the state of California should be a priority. So good job on that. I'm going to go to Quamel, who's calling from Gardena and would like to ask you a question, Senator. Good morning, Quamel.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yes. Good morning to both of y'all. I had to get on with my other Gardena native son. Just to share a couple of things, you know, to the Bruce's Beach point. You know, I mean, being in the South Bay, you know, it's kind of the old sundown town history. So to get to a couple of things real quick, you know, you might know the story about Alondra Park and how that once was a plot of land that was taken by the group of white residents and the cities away from a black person that wanted to build a black neighborhood in that part, and that was seized, as well as you may know a wild history about the Dominguez Channel and how, you know, where it's now, you know, Gardena and Carson, all these places that it used to be called N-word Slough, and was there for a long time before all of these cities around here were built. So I just wanted to throw that history out there, and I'll take your comments off the air about that. Thank you.
Interesting, Quamel. Well, and it also begs the question, is there a domino effect or more that will come forth in terms of these kinds of seizures as a result of you guys' actions around Bruce's Beach?
We'll hope so. And what he's referring to right there is right at Artesia in Vermont, and I'm happy to say I helped get I helped get money and bring attention to that as well. It was called the Nigger Slough, and that's where runaway slaves were forced to live on a slough, which, you know, you couldn't build housing or anything there. And yes, and while I was on Gardena, we brought attention to that. We provided some money for helping clean that up, because it's right abuts to this Greenway Parkway in Gardena, and that's why we wanted to make sure that history was known. And as he talked about Alondra Park, yes, that was a development for African American housing, and it was this rich, prominent individual who lived in Palos Verdes, and he was incensed that as he drove from downtown L.A. home every day, that he had to pass this Negro housing situation, and he fought and bought the property or got with the county and made sure they seized the property from that developer, because African Americans were already living there and they moved them out as well. So those are parts of history that we do need to know about, and many folks are unaware of it.
Speaking of the Dominguez Channel, what's going on with the stank?
Well, it's been addressed. Like I say, it's been attributed to the fire that happened about 2 months ago in a warehouse in Carson. And those chemicals that were stored there after, you know, the fire was doused, the water runoff, all that made it down to the drainage ditches and made it into the canal, and that what's contributed to the killing of a lot of the vegetation that created that odor. And what I participated with the city of Carson a little over a month ago in a press conference is bringing attention to hydrofluoric acid. That's a toxic, and it's important that we address that. And making sure that we responded in the same manner that we did to Aliso Canyon and Porter Ranch when methane was leaking. And methane is not a toxic gas. Let's be very clear. It's very combustible, just as sulfuric acid is very combustible. But hydrofluoric acid, I should say, is toxic. And that's the issue I wanted to raise, and I raised at that press conference to understand there was a great sense of urgency. So it's been addressed. I was with Supervisor Holly Mitchell, and they're putting forth the resources there to help abate that. And I was in Carson yesterday, and I didn't smell it as much. It's still there, but I didn't smell it as much.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's so many residual effects from these fires that we don't even think about. I mean, I started pondering that, like we're breathing in refrigerators and cars and whatever else is burnt up in these fires, and certainly you know, the impact in the Dominguez Channel gives you pause. When we come forward, Senator Bradford, I want to talk about, we are going to circle back to the athletes, but I also want to talk about one of my favorite projects of yours, and that's the Gardena Jazz Festival. This is KBLA Talk 1580.
More of First Things First with Dominique DePrima when we come forward. We knew you'd stick around. This is LA's home for progressive talk radio. Be heard. Welcome back to KBLA Talk 1580.
Indeed. So happy and privileged to have Senator Steve Bradford on the phone with us this morning, representing the 35th District. Before you got on the phone with Senator, we were having conversation, as we often do around here, about reimagining public safety. And one of the things that always comes up is, why aren't law enforcement officers drug tested when they make a shooting? My personal opinion is that they ought to be drug tested just regularly anyway. You're carrying a gun. I mean, we drug test our MTA drivers, and I would include steroids in that. To me, it seems like if you're carrying a gun and you have the opportunity or the responsibility of possibly taking lives, that we would want to know what your status was.
I agree, and it's so funny that you mentioned this. This is something we started looking at earlier this year. There's clear evidence that the biggest abusers of steroids are many times law enforcement officers, and they do have psychological effects on you. They do alter a whole lot of stuff other than your body, your mind as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm a strong proponent that officers should be drug tested. Again, they have a right of taking life in the course of their daily activity. So why shouldn't they be tested?
Right, a pilot, or I mean, you can't even work at Disneyland really without getting drug tested.
Without a doubt. So I think its time has come. I think we would all feel a lot better about, you know, who's out there on the streets, knowing what's in their bodies as well.
Yeah, and I'm a big proponent. I would love to see some incentives, too, like incentives for cops who get in great shape, who take yoga classes, who take Tai Chi or counseling, or who go attend community events, not the ones that they are making in the community, but the ones that are self-generated, that kind of stuff, where they would also incentivize behavior that we know is helpful.
That's important. I mean, I often say you see the breakfast with the cop or coffee with the cop. That's nice, but I agree with what you're saying, that not the events that they want to put together and, you know, support. But those other small things, I think Ozzie Gonczak is a prime example of having a great relationship. And if you know Ms. Gonczak, who's considered the mother of Watson, has probably been the biggest impact on police reform, especially LAPD, over the last 60 years. I mean, she brought those officers into Watts and made them get out their cars and made them get involved with the community. And I think she's a fine example of how police can interface with, like you say, other than those events that the police create themselves.
Yep. So talk to me a bit more about SB 206. I personally hope it's the path to college athletes being paid for their work. They are workers. This, as far as I know, slavery has been abolished. It doesn't do that, but let's talk about what it is doing. Just some concrete examples that folks can get their minds around.
Well, again, it allows athletes to monetize their name, image, and likeness. Many people are under the belief simply because you have a full-ride scholarship that all your college expenses are taken care of. That's the farthest thing from the truth. We know where athletes from California, for example, go back east to play in a game, and they don't even have an overcoat. You know,
right.
They don't even have money to go out and grab a hamburger. So this allows them to do that because their counterparts, say you're a science major or a computer science major or a music major, and you develop an app or you develop a song, you can monetize that while on scholarship, but athletes can't. They can't teach the sport that they play. They can't sign autographs. So SB 206 allows them now to do that. But let's take it another step forward. We did SB 26 this year, which we call Fair Play to Act 2.0, which now implements our bill. It went in effect September of this year, and now it includes community college athletes as well. So that's what this bill does. And again, it allows them to go out, and if they want to sign with an agent and do endorsements, say you're from some small town, who knows, say Temecula. There, you're a local hero.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the local car dealer or the hamburger stand wants to put your picture up in the window, wants to put a poster up on the wall, and pay you to use your likeness to help sell cars or sell hamburgers. You can now do that. And many people think it's going to be this multi-million dollar contract and it's going to be in conflict with the university. That's the farthest thing from the truth. And so what we did with 206 started a tidal wave 2 years ago that 18 other states introduced similar legislation to the point where the NCAA saw this, you know, movement afoot, and they decide to get in front of it and implement their own so-called name, image, and likeness measure. But it was watered down to what we were trying to do. So we're happy that ours is a standard, and hopefully the rest of the nation will follow what we've done so far here in California.
I promised we'd talk about the Gardena Jazz Fest. That's up next with Senator Stephen Bradford on KBLA Talk 1580.
We know you have options. Thank you for making the best choice. The only station in LA of the people, by the people, for the people. We are unapologetically progressive. KBLA Talk 1580. Stay tuned. The conversation continues right now. Dominique DePrima on First Things First.
And we are talking with Senator Steve Bradford of the 35th District. Now, we're about to pass the mic to Tavis Smiley in about 3 minutes before we run out of time. I do want to commend you, though. I love that there's $8.5 million coming for Inglewood's Market Street just to upgrade the whole whole area. I love that this $3.5 million is headed to the L.A. Black Workers Center to create workforce equity. This is incredible. That's proactive, and I love hearing that along with that money that we talked about earlier for King Drew, Martin Luther King and Charles Drew University. So talk to me about the Gardena Jazz Festival.
I will, but before I get there, we also secured $30 million in the budget for social equity cannabis program.
Ah, okay.
Waiver and deferral, which is critically important. Again, just leaving Atlanta, this is the topic of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, the lack of diversity, and more specifically, the lack of African-Americans in this space. Now to move to Gardena Jazz Festival. It's a festival that I started in 2003 as a member of the Gardena City Council. As you know, when I was elected, Gardena was on the brink of bankruptcy. We were cutting programs, not adding programs. So individuals in the community said, hey, we need to do something. We want to bring the community together. And so I got with friends that I grew up with who were musicians, Paul Jackson Jr., Cornelius Mims, my late good friend Rod Jones, I'm sorry, Rod Wright is very much a part of us, Rod Jones, who I grew up with, who badgered me and said, let's do this. We grew up together in the neighborhood, so we came together. And the only condition, I had to raise all the money because, again, the city was not in any position to pay for it. And we still don't. And that's what I want to be clear. Gardena is far different from a lot of other cities. We have never used general fund money, which is taxpayers' money, to put this event on. For the last 18 years, I go out and I raise the lion's share of this money, and we put this on. It's not a for-profit event. It's a community event, and all we try to do is cover our expenses and not to try to make any money off of this thing. So we're excited about it. We're 19 years in. As you know, it's a great event. The community's very proud of it, and it's probably the biggest event now in the South Bay, and it's surely the biggest event in the city of Gardena.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing that. I don't know what it is about you Gardena brothers. Elston Butler, who's our president of Smiley Audio Media here, he's from Gardena, too, and I don't know what y'all got some kind of special sauce over there.
D.O. Hughley, you can name a whole bunch of Gardena folks. You know, we do the thing. Like I said, Paul Jackson Jr., probably the best guitarist in the country. We all come out of Gardena. It's good stock in Gardena.
Well, Senator Steve Bradford, thank you so much for blessing Gardena and blessing KBLA.
Thank you for this opportunity, Dominique, and thank you for the great work you do and allow me to be on First Things First.
Appreciate you always leave us with a quote, and today it is Muhammad Ali, since we were talking sports. He says, don't count the days, make the days count. Tavis Smiley is next after news and traffic. I'm Dominique DePrima. Until tomorrow, one love.
KBLA 1580 Santa Monica.